ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
प्रजोपद्रवम् आलक्ष्य
लोका
यथिकरम् चत्वम् मथम् च वासुदेवस्य संजहारजुनो द्वयम् प्रजोपद्रवम् आलक्ष्य लोकव्यतिकरम् चतम् मथम् च वासुदेवस्य संजहारजुनौ द्वयम् प्रजोपद्रवमालक्ष्य लोकव्यतिकरम् च त्वम् मथम् च वासुदेवस्य संजहारार्जुनौ द्वयम् प्रजोपद्रवमालक्ष्य लोकव्यतिकरम् च त्वम् मथम् च वासुदेवस्य संजहारार्जुनौ द्वयम्
Upadravam, disturbance.
Alakshya,
having seen it.
Loka,
the planets.
Yatikaram,
destruction.
Cha,
also.
Tam,
that.
Matam cha,
and the opinion.
Vasudevasya, Avasudeva,
Shri Krishna.
Sanjahara,
retracted.
Arjuna,
Arjuna.
Dvayam,
both the weapons. Translation. Thus seeing the disturbance of the general populace and the imminent destruction of the planets, Arjuna at once retracted both Brahmastra weapons as Lord Shri Krishna desired. Purport. The theory that the modern atomic bomb explosions can annihilate the world is childish imagination. First of all, the atomic energy is not powerful enough to destroy the world. And secondly, ultimately, all rests on the supreme will of the Supreme Lord, because without his will or sanction, nothing can be built up or destroyed. It is foolish also to think that natural laws are ultimately powerful. Material nature's laws works under the direction of the Lord, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. The Lord says here that natural laws work under his supervision. The world can be destroyed only by the will of the Lord and not by the whims of tiny politicians. Lord Shri Krishna desired that the weapons released by both Droni and Arjuna be withdrawn. And it was carried out by Arjuna at once. Similarly, there are many agents of the all-powerful Lord, and by his will only can one execute what he desires. So here is a matter of faith. that is being explained here. That one has to have faith in that this world works because of the Lord. So then two elements, just the material energy itself functioning, how it works, how it deals and everything. And then how those who are then working for the Lord, how then through them the Lord does so many works. So both these elements. So one is the general, just the material energy, and then one is the devotees themselves. So with the material energy, this kind of faith is very important, because without it, one cannot come very easily to this second platform, or one won't really come to this platform. Is that if we want to be able to do the Lord's work, then we have to understand that it is the Lord's work and have faith in the Lord. Otherwise, the tendency will be that we are the doer. Right? We've heard this principle is that everything belongs to the Lord, everything is the Lord. It's all the universal form. So Prabhupada gives the example that, or gives the point that, therefore our hands and legs belong to the Lord. Right? The universal form is everything. Then our hands and legs also belong to that universal form. So then, that means that since the Lord's hands and legs, they should be used as the Lord wants the hands and legs to be used. So this then establishes that whatever has to be done for His pleasure. And naturally with His sanction. So being done for His pleasure, then one has to know what should be done. What is the Lord's direction? What does He want? What does He want us to do? So that is given then in Guru Sadhana Shastra. And then understanding this, then we apply that in this principle. But if we think it is my hands, my legs, my work, my results, then Krishna, even though He'll sanction it, still you have to have His sanction. But it's kind of like Prabhupada says, you do so at your own risk. Krishna says, yes, you do it, I'll give you the sanction, but at your risk. Because now you are taking it that it's your work. It's your hands, it's your work. So therefore then the results are also yours. Right? Then so much risk is there. You know, so many times, you know, the child wants to do something. Parents are saying, it's not such a good idea. No, no, he wants to do. Okay, you do. But the results are your problem. Right? So the kid will do something and then everything goes wrong and he comes crying to the parents, hey, this is happening, that happening, what to do? So the parents have to come straighten everything out. But it's just his risk. So that's the principle, is that if it's understood is that this is all the Lord's, what's happening, then there isn't anything else other than Krishna consciousness. There is not another option. The other is illusion. Right? Like I think it was Newton, or I think he had designed a concept of the universe and made it mechanical. Right? And one day one of his good friends came over to see. And so he operated it and the planets would move around and everything, and the person was amazed. He says, wow, who made this? He says, nobody. It just happened. He says, oh, come on. Nothing just happens. You know, somebody made it. It's a machine, it's working, it's going on, it moves perfectly and precisely. It didn't, no, it just happened. I came in here and there it was. You know, it's just, you know, somebody had to make it. And then he went on arguing and arguing like this for a long time. Newton said, no, it just happened, but, you know, it doesn't, you know, like this. Because his friend was an atheist. And though he was the scientist, he was a theist. So he says, you know, then at the end of it, then he agreed, okay, I made it. So now if this had to be made by me and it works nice, so you can understand the original, then that means it had to be made by somebody. You know, had to be made by God. So there isn't another option. So sometimes the mind likes to take shelter in other options because the other options seem more nice, more palatable. You know, it's something that we can get away with. You know, it's not me, it's not my ego, I'm not the problem. You know, I didn't do anything wrong. Everything's working. I'm doing everything right. Everybody else is wrong. Or, okay, you know, I just made this little mistake, but, you know, but there's some other alternative. But the idea is that, no, there's not. You know, the idea, oh, there'll be world destruction and this and that. It's very interesting. I think it was 74 or 5. There's a whole discussion probably that mentioned about, you know, world war and atomic war and all this. And so the devotees are very, very worried, you know, though because Prabhupada is here, it never got past the conversation. It wasn't like, you know, like this. So then they were going on and on and on about this. And then asking so many questions, what do we do, this and that. And then they got into the whole thing of the fallout, and then you have to, you know, remove two feet of dirt or 3 feet of dirt, and you can grow something, this and that, going on and on. You know, what we do to protect ourselves. We probably make points. So, if you die 20 years, a bomb drops on your head, and you die 20 years earlier than scheduled, what's the problem? You go back to Godhead. You know, so who wants to stay around here anyway? You know? So then, there's so much that the material energy itself can be moved to such degree, but it can only be moved by what's sanctioned. So it's not that the materials can destroy the world. Materials can only destroy the world as God allows it. So then maybe someone may ask, well, why would God allow it then? Right? God's so kind and merciful, why would He allow this to happen? So then, but the point is that the people want it to happen. They actually want it. You know, it's just like Prabhupada makes the point, is that you have a weapon, you want to use it. You only have it because you want to use it. So they have these nuclear weapons because they want to use them. You can't not use them, right? You get something new thing, new gizmo, new gadget, or a new situation, and they say, don't do this, you can't use it. It's kind of like you just wait for the situation where you can secretly use it, you know? So they blow up the bomb under the earth or, you know, out in the middle of nowhere, someplace, or, you know, then they can see, oh, I see, it works. So they want. So then, therefore, then that kind concept is there, is that if you set up all the nuclear weapons all at once, then it would destroy everything. But the point is it won't happen like that. It can't happen like that. Because it's the Lord's plan. Prabhupada said that it's scheduled by how sinful the people are, there has to be a world war. But if the devotees preach nicely and that's going on, there's no need. Because the war is only to correct the people that are not God conscious. So the devotees, if they are God conscious, there's no problem. There's no difficulty. So if that's there and preaching is going nicely, then it reduces the sinful reactions. So if there's that kind of faith that everything is actually in control of the Lord, then life can go on nicely. If there's something happening that's not under the Lord's control or direction, that makes it difficult. Then faith becomes disturbed and all. Then faith becomes, one becomes bewildered. So it's important to know that it's not going to work differently. Even the laws of material nature, right? The modern likes to finesse the laws. So you have to establish that, no, it's going to work according to the laws. There's God-given laws, they're going to work that way. But the point is they're God-given laws. So even the laws are only working because they're coming from God. So that element then is very important, that we establish that it's only going to happen because Krishna allows it. Krishna lets it happen. And something positive or dynamic Krishna consciousness is also only going to happen because Krishna allows it. Means the preaching mission will go on. It's going to happen. Lord Chaitanya has spoken it. Nityananda Prabhu has confirmed it. The acharyas have planned it and executed it. It will happen. There's only one question. Which persons are used as the instruments to do it? That's the only question. There's no question that it's going to disappear. Oh, things are bad and it's going to disappear, it's going to fall apart, it's cognitive? No, there's no question of that. Yes, that person feeling like that, yes, they'll be left on the side, and someone else will do the work. That's the idea. But there's no question it won't happen. Right? We gave the example once before, is that some devotees are traveling on the train in Russia. You know, they have very pleasant train rides there, you know, 7 days, you know, Vladivostok to Moscow. And the best part about it, there's no water on the train. Right? Very nice. Good facility. So whatever, these devotees were on one of these 7 day train rides. And, right, you know, you freak out here if it's more than 24 hours, right? Yeah. So they were going along, and this man, regular looking man, walks up to them and hands them a photocopy, you know, manuscript of the Bhagavad Gita in Russian. And then he starts to tell them how they should take this book, and it's very good, and spiritual life, and, you know, answers to all your questions. You know, just straight Krishna conscious preaching, right? Right? Not, you know, feeding kids in Biafra. You know, none of that stuff. It was just straight philosophy. And they're going, and the devotees were in karmi clothes, and he didn't know. I mean, I don't even know if they were in karmi clothes. I'm not sure, but whatever. So then they ask him, where did he get this book? Why is he preaching? Oh, no, because in this book, then here, you know, points to the page, prophet says here, you must preach, you must do all this, the book distribution is the highest. All these things he's quoting, like then they're going, who is this guy? And he says, how did you come up? And he says, I found this book. And then after reading the book, then Prabhupada says that you must, you know, human life is meant for spiritual life, you must preach, you must distribute this message and everything like that. And they said, you know, what temple, your wisdom temple? And I said, temple. He says, devotees? I said, devotees? There's devotees? You know? As far as he knew, he was the only guy around that had found this book, read it, and was trying to do what Prabhupada was saying. He didn't know that at the time there was 100 temples in Russia and thousands of devotees. And he was in ecstasy when he found out that these were devotees. And, you know, you could actually get printed books rather than photocopies. So he just quote, when he get money, he'd photocopy the books and then go out and distribute them. Like that. So that's the point. The mission's going to go on. Now it's just a matter of whether we want to be part of it or not. That's the question. It's not a matter of that, oh, it depends upon me, and if I don't do it, it won't happen, and, you know, or if these guys fall away, then everything's lost. And it doesn't work like that. It goes on anyway. You know, you hear so many situations. It's like another one, someone's telling me they're in New York, in the temple, and they used to be, well, actually now they're back again, right? Back in Brooklyn, right? So it was back in Brooklyn when Brooklyn wasn't being looked at by all the, you know, big real estate developers like that. You know, back when it was just, you know, gang neighborhoods. So they happened to be, I think, in the Italian neighborhood. So it's like you leave your car out front, you know, to go in to take darshan, you come back, there's no wheels. You know, you leave it longer, you know, more stuff will disappear. You leave it overnight, guaranteed, no motor, no, you know, you just, they'll leave the body. That they'll leave for you, you know, too much trouble. Everything else will become. So very nice, and, you know, because the devotees were rough and ready, and the locals were rough and ready, so now and again there'd always be a rumble. So one day it was looking really bad. I mean, there was huge groups of, you know, the gang was out there, and all the, you know, the toughs in the temple, you know, all the martial arts, they're all itching to have something happen. So everything's out in the street, it's about to turn into a really bad fight. And the energy level very high, everything, and it was like yelling, so it was very bad, things were happening. And then suddenly out of nowhere, and it wasn't going down, it was just escalating, and there was no way that it was going to be stopped. Then suddenly this one devotee, I was told that he worked like in the kitchen or something, small little devotee, means in size, physical size, he was small, he was always quiet, and everything. Yeah. Then he came, he heard the noise, and I guess came up from the kitchen, because the kitchen is in the second basement in this building, right? Yeah. New York, you know. You're not going to waste any space, right? You know, it's right down at the, you know, you can look through it, so you can see the trains go by, you know, like that. So then he's there, and he came out. And I'm not sure he had some kind of a stick or something, or maybe came out with a spoon from the kitchen, I don't know. And when he saw what was going on, then he just started roaring the Shringadeva something. You know, this little dinky guy, you know, everybody's a wimp, you know, like that kind of thing. And everybody froze. Everybody was so, you know, freaked out by it, everybody froze. And then all the, you know, local gang, then they all just packed up and just ran, and just disappeared. So it's like, you know, so that's the point, is who's going to do what? You don't know. It's just, you can't say what's going to happen. So the principle is that it's the Lord's plan, it's going to happen. Now it's like here, the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Arjuna, he was not the biggest warrior out there. He's the most famous, he's the most glorious, but he wasn't the best. Drona was better than him, because he's his teacher. And Bhishma doesn't even count in the discussion, because he's in his own league. He's from the heavenly planets. Right? His mother's Gangadevi. He was personally taught, you know, the martial sciences and the kingly sciences from Brihaspati, from Sukracharya, and then he learned from the four Kumaras. You know, and he learned from everybody. You know, he was not from here. You know, Bhima was the strongest 10,000 elephants, right? And, you know, he's glorified Bhima and Dhritarashtra, who is it? Kichika, Salva, and I think Duryodhana. They were the strongest 10,000 elephants. So it wasn't, this is not just a exaggeration. You know, Bhima would pick up elephants and throw them at the other elephants. Right? So, when in the Rajasuya sacrifice, then Shishupal was, you know, glorifying Krishna in his own unique method. Then Bhima was so upset, he wanted to get up and kill him. But Bhishma just held him in place without any effort. You know, you don't even hear about it. He just, you know, held him down. You know, it's watching the proceedings, and with one hand he's holding him down. So, but you just don't hear about it, because it wasn't his business to express it, because he was only standing in to help the actual king. Like that. If he had been king, then we would have heard of all these amazing things. But he wasn't. So it's he was in his another category. So the point was, is it's there was no question of Arjuna defeating anybody on the battlefield in these situations. It was not possible. But because Krishna wanted it, and he was fighting for Krishna, then he was an instrument by which then everything got done. So that's the principle. So that faith must be there that this mission is Krishna's mission. And in the mission, the items, you know, the personalities involved will get glorified for what they do. But we must always remember is the mission is the mission. Like you go in, the cook goes into the kitchen, and the cook cooks something wonderful, and everybody is glorifying. The cook knows, you know, he had good facilities. You know, he had specialty utensils. He had specialty. Therefore, he could cook nicely. Okay, he's a cook, but without the special things, he's not going to do it. Right? That's how it's manifest. You manifest your cooking skill through the kitchen paraphernalia. But now the normal person is not going to talk about that. They don't know that. Right? They'll just talk about the cook. But the cook knows it's the facility. Like that. So then, that's the point is, the Lord, He does everything. He's the one doing it. It's not the pots and pans who are cooking. Right? The spoon is not doing the cooking, the pot is not doing the fire, it's not. No, but the Lord's control of it, then through that, as instrument, then everything happens. So So the tendency is because we think we are the doer, then we also think others are the doer. And therefore we think either ourselves or others can make this movement happen, flourish, or be destroyed. But that's not the point. Because we may want it to flourish or we want it to be destroyed, then what is the Lord's desire? Then we can take part. Now, it means 10,000 years from now, the Sankirtan mission will disappear. There will be the last day that anyone preached. The last moment. So if we want, we can be the cause of that. We just have to wait around for 1,000 years. Like that. Or if we want to see it flourish, then now's when it begins. But one must always remember that. It's the beginning, it's not happening much. Because it's just starting. So the beginning and end look very similar. So those with faith see what's going on now as the beginning of a very victorious movement. And those with less faith see it as the end. Because it looks similar. But if someone's educated, they know the difference. You know, the Brahmin lives simply, and the common man lives simply. Right? It's the kings and the business people who live opulently. So someone without education may think the Brahmin is just a common man, or the common man's a big, you know, intellectual. Because they can't tell. So one has to be very, very careful, and the key to this is not intelligence. It doesn't actually have anything to do with how intelligent you are, like someone was telling me the other day. It's one's faith in Krishna. So it was in Vrindavan, and they were... It was in Vrindavan, this little girl comes up to him, little like four-year-old girl, five-year-old girl, Rajbasi girl, you know. And he says something, or he gives her something, and yeah, you know Krishna? She says, no, I don't know Krishna. He says, you don't know Krishna? No, I don't know Krishna. He says, you're a Rajbasi, everyone in Vrindavan knows Krishna. You don't know Krishna? He says, no, I don't know Krishna. Like that. By this time, I guess the girl is tired of the conversation. So as she's walking away, then she turns back and says, but I know Radha. So it's a matter of what you actually know, because we don't know Krishna. We know the devotees. You know, we sometimes get so caught up, you know, in doing the work and this and being blessed with being able to do something that we think we're the one doing it. So we always have to be very, very careful. So neither are we doing it, and neither are the karmis doing it. So the karmis can only do what they do by the Lord's grace. Right? You think it's out of the middle of nowhere that just somebody's going to come along and dream up electricity? Right? Or any of these different things that we consider great inventions, right? Where did they get the ideas from? You know, guys out there flying a kite, you know, get sacked, you know. You know, so, you know, and this is that, you know. Newton, right, sitting under an apple tree, an apple drops in his head, right? Krishna could have missed him with the apple, right? Then there would have been no Newton's theory, right? But you know, the apple hit him on the head, right? So this idea is that the karmis can't do anything. They can't destroy. They can't. There's no way. If we have faith, we stick to Krishna, then it will go on. It's there. It's just the way it works. It doesn't work in another way. Prabhupada says the karmis have their methods. We have ours. They're different. Right? You want to see the Prime Minister, then you may or may not be able to see him. You can try to make an appointment. You might not even get to see the secretary. They'll make the appointment. Right? There's a secretary that makes the appointment. You got to go through another secretary to get to them. Right? Karmis have their methods to do this. Very long, drawn out. Maybe you do. You get given a minute or two. Devotees just walk in. All right, Paul, I'll give out the shot. And walk right into the guy's office. It's a different method. Right? Different method. Devotees, right? Take a bunch of devotees that, you know, for much of their career, they would sit there and be listening to, you know, music by the Beatles and be very much, you know, reverential towards the Beatles, and then they're sent to London, and, you know, in a few months, then they're staying in the Beatles' house, you know, and that's where they live, you know, and they preach from there. You know, it's like, normal people don't do this, can't do this. So that's the difference. The devotees have a different method, but the method is still in line with God's laws. It's not opposed to God's laws. So that's the point, is it's within what God, because you're doing God's work, so therefore works according to His laws. But how He's going to organize those laws, that's up to Him. You know, what combination and this and that, what He's going to apply. You know, that's the principle. Like we see it here in the beginning of in the Gita. Arjuna is talking Dharma Shastra. The Krishna is talking Niti Shastra, which is lower. So because through Dharma Shastra, no one's going to win this battle. But through Niti Shastra, you can. So therefore Krishna takes Niti, because he wants the battle won. Right? So he doesn't go against the scriptures. But he uses Niti instead of Dharma. The Dharma is the higher. Like this. And then, but he gets them to follow Niti by preaching Dharma. Because Arjuna was in the mood of Dharma, so through the medium of Dharma Shastra, he preaches to him to follow the Niti. Right? So very... So what you would, you know, one would think, no, it's God, he'll always use the Dharma Shastra. Why the Dharma Shastra go for the Moksha Shastras or the Bhakti Shastras? Like, you know, if the Bhakti Shastra is going to kill Karna. You know, kill him, but that's it. We'll go out there. So much halava, the guy will die, right? So Krishna has his methods and he gets it done. But that's his fun, as he does it too. So these then that should be there is that the materialists have nothing to offer if it's not connected to Krishna. It's not sanctioned by Krishna. Anything that works is sanctioned by the Lord. Then following the natural path, but the natural path is also connected to God. So being natural and not connected to God is useless. Right? Or natural living, natural clothes, natural food, natural... It's all useless if it's not connected to Krishna. What's the meaning of it? Right? Even the concept of natural, that's made by God. Right? He's the one who lives out in the forest. Right? He's the one that drinks milk and takes care of cows and, you know, eats vegetables and fruits and, you know, nice healthy stuff. Right? Healthy life, fresh air, honest work, you know, good food, natural clothes, you know. So it's like that. But it's because that's what he sanctions, what he appreciates. So it works. But the point is that it's not connected to him is just as useless. Right? Less trouble useless. Right? A natural way of living is less trouble to other people, but just as un-Krishna conscious as an unnatural lifestyle, you know, modern vast lifestyle. They're both, why would one say the natural is better than the artificial? On what standard? By what ground? Right? You can't say, well, everybody knows, because if everybody knew, why are people living an artificial lifestyle? Right? You open a magazine, they're not talking about natural lifestyle. Maybe a natural, resort, where they're going to charge you $2,000 a night because it's natural. Right? But other than, you know, if it makes money, natural is great, right? Organic costs you more than the normal, so therefore it's big business. If organic was cheaper, you wouldn't find it on the shelves. You'd have to go out and pick it yourself. You know? So, yeah. So why would it be better? Only because the natural is closer to God's laws. The natural itself has no meaning, but it's closer to God's laws. So following God's laws, that's more important. But following the laws without understanding they come from God is also not as important. Pious won't give any trouble to many other living entities, maybe to a cabbage or two or something. But other than that, no. Well, an artificial lifestyle gives trouble to everybody. But the point is that discerning this is only by it coming from the Lord, not otherwise. So that's always, it must be taken all the way through to the Lord. If it's stopped somewhere in between, that's what Prabhupada calls it, an ism. If it stops before the Lord, it's an ism. Useless. If it connects to the Lord, it may have some validity. But if it doesn't connect to the Lord, what's with feeding people, great, nice, okay. Tomorrow they're hungry. Then, what great work you've done. Right? Okay, they lived another day, but what's the use of their life? So why is it important to live another day? Right? But you give them prasadam, then there's some benefit. So we distribute prasadam. We don't feed poor people. We distribute prasadam. You get both effects. So if the devotee gets distracted and actually thinks it's valuable feeding people, then they've missed the point. No, the point is that whatever is done must be connected to Krishna. Devotees are kind and compassionate, so they have prasadam, they have means, they don't want to see anybody be hungry. But the point is it's not just that. It means if they're not engaged to fulfill their hunger, if it's not service, what's the use? Right? So one has to think about that. Why is there a contradiction? Why is it Prabhupada will say how not so important are all these social missions and this and that, but at the same time he's talking about that no one within 10 square miles of the temple should go hungry. So what does it mean? It means no one within 10 square miles should be taking prasad. Everybody within 10 miles of the temple should be taking prasad. That's the point. So when there's a contradiction, it's not something's wrong there. It means our understanding's wrong. Otherwise, we don't understand it. Contradiction means that because you're dealing with the world of duality, then for one side you deal one way, and the other side you deal the other. Right? Good and bad. So there's different definitions and methods of good and different definitions and methods of bad. But the principle is the same. It's activity. It's work. Right? It's action. So action is the same. It's still working by the modes. Right? You can use the mode of goodness for sinful means. Right? You can use the mode of ignorance for pious or devotional means. Right? You know, you take your tomatoes and put them in a blender and turn it on. That is a combination of modes with passion and ignorance, right? Passion, activity is going on. Ignorance, the form of the tomato, has just been altered very seriously, right? It's just gone from a solid into a liquid, right? So that's the mode of ignorance. It's been destroyed, right? But it's in the bigger picture is that you're cooking, so you're doing an activity that's passion. In it, you're maintaining, you're cleaning your pots and all that. So that's a mode of goodness. Wiping the counter. It's a mode of goodness. Now you could be maintaining something that is used for ignorance. So that's the point, is that the modes just do their work. Now it's what your purpose is, that's what makes the difference. So if it's being done for Krishna, then it works. Then there's no contradiction. So that's the thing. If we find a contradiction, means we haven't actually connected it fully to Krishna. Maybe partially, or we've connected one side to Krishna. But when we connect two sides to Krishna, then we'll actually understand the principle on which it's functioning. Then there's no contradiction. Is there any questions?
Free ourselves from those preconceptions.
But, okay.
contract.
Ancient. Primordial contract. Just sign on the dotted line. But shouldn't I read it? He says, no, no, just sign it. So, yeah, see, that's the actually, technically what's happening is the material energy is a dream. It means it's there, it's real, but how we perceive it, it's just like within the mind, the dream is based on real elements. The mind can't create a dream that's not within its experience. You know, one cannot function in a realm outside of one's experience. So it's just like, you know, it's like, let's say, your field is music because you've heard so much music and you work in the field, therefore you can be inspirational in that field, or art, or management, or knowledge, or whatever it is. Because of the field, then you can function. So that's the, so it's what you do with it that is the realness. You know, it's there, but you know, it's just like you can take something and make some noise come out of the musical instrument. You know, like the kids go up and bang on it. So you can say those sounds are real, but to a musician, they're not real. The sound is there, but it's not real sound. It's not music. So the same way as material energy is there, you know, it's moving, it's happening, but it's not real because it's not connected to Krishna. It's not actual music. It's not connected. So then we become conditioned by what we think the material world is. And that's the most dangerous thing actually for us in spiritual life, is our perceptions of what it is. That's why this modern concept of perception is valuable. Doesn't fly for anyone who wants to go back to Godhead. Not one serious practitioner of Krishna consciousness considers perception as important. So that it's being preached nowadays that it is a spiritual defect on the part of the devotees. Serious spiritual defect. You made to get your work done because you're doing it for Krishna and you want the best result. Therefore, you will consider the perceptions of those you have to deal with, so you tailor a preaching strategy that person will be able to digest it. But to actually, within one's own heart, think that perception actually has some meaning, that's a spiritual defect, that's maya. Because you have to work with the material energy, but you think the material energy is valuable other than its connection to Krishna. That's maya. But because we're so used to it, that maya is normal. That's the thing. I mean, we only speak strongly just to, so that we're not complacent. We should be aware. You know, we should know. In other words, it's just like someone who's successful knows what they're up against, what is the task, what is the opponent, or the adversary, or the elements they have to deal with. So, because in this sleeping state, we think that our value system that is superimposed on the material energy is important. You know, one person walks by a piece of driftwood, and it's just, you know, just something there on the beach. Another walks by and it's art. You know? Like this. Another walks by and hey, that's how they're going to cook dinner. You know? So it's like you've got different perceptions. Probably gives the example of the young girl. You know, a very beautiful, attractive young girl. So for the young man, and then she's the most desirable object. For the saintly person, it's undesirable. There's no need. There's no attraction, no need for it at all. So it's completely undesirable. And for the dog, something great to eat. Right? The girl dies, he'll eat her in the moment. You know, right? So all these different living entities see the same object in completely different ways. So because of that, then now it's the concept of seeing in different ways, that's real. So that must be kept. So the solution to the problem of being in illusion about the material energy, by solving it, by getting rid of the concept of perception, that's bogus, because that's your impersonalism or voidism. Their thing is that the material world is bogus, so get rid of the concept that there is such a thing of interaction and values and all these things. The thing is that it's what connection to the Lord, that is useful. So the whole idea is that we have to wake ourselves up to what's the real perception of the material world by hearing. My brother says is that's the only way to wake up, is by the hearing process. That's the most powerful. By calling someone's name, you can wake them up. You may come there and physically move them, they may or may not wake up. You call the name, it gets through. So by chanting the holy name, by associating with devotees, by hearing from the shastras, by doing service, living in the Dham, worshipping the deity, then by that way, gradually we wake up. So that's the thing. So we should never be proud of our previous, dreaming state. That's the mode of ignorance, because it's without knowledge. So anyone who's proud of their previous qualifications, their educational ability, their material facility or situation or experience, then it's mode of ignorance. Their devotional service will also be in the mode of ignorance. This is explained by Kapila Muni in the third canto. If they perform this service for material benefit, worship the deity for material benefits, mode of passion. They worship the Lord and all that to become freed from material energy that's mixed with goodness. If they do it to please the Lord, that's pure goodness. So that one has previous perceptions, that's normal. Otherwise we wouldn't be here. If we don't have, then that means you're an acharya and you're just waiting to happen, right? It's just a matter of the Lord making the arrangement. But if we have, that's normal. But to maintain them, or to be attached to them, or to profess them, that's all wrong. It's understood it's there. We make mistakes. And these things. That's why the devotee is broad-minded. Because it's understood is everybody has mistakes. The neophyte has a tendency to think is, if we're not devotees, then the devotees are nuts. If we're devotees, then everybody else is nuts. And then within that, then who is a devotee? The way I'm a devotee, then they're okay. Everyone else is nuts. But Rupa Goswami, Prabhupada would see it that everybody's a devotee. It's just a matter of some know it, some don't. And then of those who do, then, according to Rupa Goswami, you associate with those who are like-minded. Who have a similar nature that you can relate to them than to you. In other words, the conditioned natures or the ability to deal with the conditioned nature don't conflict. Like that. Because associating with any senior devotees is valuable. But because of either their own experience and that, then they're more comfortable dealing with one kind of conditioned nature as opposed to another. So then in more close interaction, then you choose those who can relate to your nature. Because they can help you wake up. Right? Either they've gone through it or they've been with people who have gone through it. So they can show you that process of waking up, because they can deal with the ego. Because the difficulty comes is that we identify with the dream. Like we see ourselves in the dream, that's us. And whatever happens in the dream, we wake up, we're breathing hard, or this, we're agitated, or, because of identifying so strongly. So that means to correct this, you have to be able to deal with the ego. And to deal with the ego means you're going to have to question the value system that your mind has accepted. And you're going to have to question the choice of our mind on what elements that the intellect discerned that we chose. Right? You have so many options you could take that the intelligence will say are there. and then the mind chooses one of those.
So that has to be questioned.
We also have to bring into question, is my intelligence so fine that I actually see the differences? Because without knowledge, you don't know what you're looking at. Right? You can't tell. Let's say, that experience. I was told that in Ireland, the farmers there can tell the difference between 40 different kinds of green. I even think they have names for them. And it's the most developed green, you know, in any language or anything in the world. It's, I guess, the nature of what they farm and everything, they need to know that. So, in any way. So, but a normal person is green, okay, darker green, lighter green, you know, it's all kind of green, you know. But they can't tell you, okay, these walls are green, but there's a little more blue in it, you know. So therefore, it comes out that color. So they can't tell that, they won't know. So without knowledge, without training, you can't tell what is there. So then that may be brought into question. Because we think we're very trained and very intelligent. We think our decisions are very good. We think our identity is fine. So unless we have faith that in some, you know, devotees and the scriptures and guru, how are we going to change that? Because otherwise, that's the normal thing, is number one is always fine. If there's any anomaly, it's always in everybody else. So it's basically by association, by studying, by hearing, and by association, and by practical service. But then we can change that, and we can wake up. The more service we do, the more knowledge we have, the more association, then the more we start to wake up. Knowledge doesn't mean facts and figures. Knowledge means that realization, understanding, like that. That's what's necessary. That's why bhakti yoga, you perform your service, devotional activity, with knowledge of what's going on and that is for Krishna. That will then free you from that, from the dream. Right? Liberation means freed from the dream. Right? But now in liberation it has two parts. One is moksha and one is brahmabhuta. So moksha means you're freed from the general concept that I am material energy, but you're not freed from the concept that I am God. But brahmabhuta means you're freed from both. Like that. So that's the devotee's platform. But one has to be free. So it always has to be very, very careful that we're not attached to something that's not according to the Guru Sadhana Shastra. It may be there. We may find it. We have to make a plan and remove it. But we should never say it's fine and then especially make a philosophy. Because it said, Manu mentions that they who make the decision that a bogus philosophy is bona fide, then they'll get the reaction for that. It means the person who's approved it will get the reaction for it, even though they didn't do it. And it said the person who professes the bogus philosophy gets 100 times the reaction. So if anyone condones or they don't do, they still get the reaction. Like that. And someone who preaches it, God help them. You know? So it's not a matter of it doesn't matter. Because the thing is, it's God. Everything's God. So if you misuse God, you get a reaction, that's all. It's an obvious answer to us. So that's the principle. So it's only by association. There's no other way. There's no other method. Problem is in the modern situation, you have a difficulty that of the conditioned nature that is very prominent in the modern economic and political situation. That is that your position, you have an identity because you're protesting against someone else's position. Your position is because the other is wrong. Right? Like we may say, material life is wrong, But that doesn't, it's not that that makes spiritual life right. Spiritual life is right because it is right. It's what God has given is right. And material life is wrong because God said it's wrong. So spiritual life stands on its own. Right? So that we're good because the karmis are bad, or our temple's good because that one's bad, or I'm a good devotee because the others are bad, or grihastha's good because brahmachari sannyasis are bad, or sannyasi's good because brahmachari grihastha's bad, or men are good because women are bad, or women are good because men are bad. Like this, that won't work. So this concept, this Protestant concept, that you just protest against something else and that makes your position good, then it's a difficulty. Because then in it, who's decided what the protest is? That's ourself. Because then our connection with God is simply our sentiment. How I decide my connection with God is, that's the way it is, in my perception. It's not that God has given a method. Right? Because ritual is removed. But it gives rise because of this. Because the living entity can't live without religion. Therefore, economics, politics, and science become religion. They are the Protestant religion. Right? You throw God into it, then I perform my economics and political and scientific and sensual activities. Somehow or another, say, grateful to God. Right? You know, he's given us some bread today, so we're happy. But more form than that, then no. But to do business, to make politics, or to enjoy the senses, or to gain mechanical knowledge, there is a formula, and you have to follow it strictly, because it's God's law. So what's happened is then God's law becomes separated from God, and it's not even seen as natural law. Necessarily. It's just seen as science, that it's somebody who's dreamt this up, somebody's come up with this knowledge. So that is very dangerous for, as a conditioned nature, for the devotee. Because devotee is not pratyaksha or observation or vox populi or perception. It's what is heard from the scriptures. And then you take what's heard from the scriptures and bring it to the point in your life where you receive it. If you start from perception and what people say, you've lost it. You're never going to get anywhere. You know, that my connection to God is simply my whim rather than the process of sadhana bhakti, the process of the Vedic culture, the process of philosophy given in the scriptures. Right there is a big obstacle. Another thing about the Protestant is there's no saint anymore. If you think about it, there are no saints in the Protestant religion. None. Maybe the person who started it, you know, but it's just, you know, but there's no saints. You'll find in all the others where they have a hierarchy and an authority and coming down from God, they have saints. They have ritual. They have authority. But this one doesn't have. It's thrown it all out because they found a fault in authority. Right? So instead of correcting the fault of the authority, they throw out the concept of authority and any activity the authority may have done. Right? It's a natural thing. Any kid does it. Is they eat something, maybe it wasn't cooked right or something was wrong with it or it wasn't exactly ideal. They don't like it. And then after then, they won't taste it again. Even though it's perfectly cooked, it's fine, it's good, they wouldn't have a bad experience. But no, because they had a bad experience, that's it. Right? You just throw it out. So that's Protestant. Eternally damned, you do something wrong, you're eternally damned. That means you have faith in material energy. You don't have faith in devotional service. Right? Darkness is darkness. Candle is light. One candle, one little flame, one candle power will dispel the darkness of this big room that's tens of thousands of times larger by volume. Right? So that's the thing. Anything connected with Krishna will remove the darkness. But unless one has that faith, and one has faith that
a wrong action done can only be corrected by a right action, and God doesn't have to be part of it. And not only that, because the whole basis of the whole religion is whimsical, therefore whatever I decide is the correctional method, that's what is supposed to be going to work. Does that make sense? So you can see is that even there, our conditioning still goes back to religion. Even the material energy, you want to look at it, you have to look at it through the vision of religion. Not science, not history, but it has to be religion. Right? Like that. So that's the principle. Because everybody has a religion. What it is, maybe hedonism, but still it's a religion. It has its method. Right? If you're a hedonist, you know, you can't necessarily be nice. If you're nice, you can't be a good hedonist. Right? Consider it, you can't be a hedonist. Right? It just, so it has its religion, it has its method, you have to follow it. So conditioned by these things, then these become obstacles in our spiritual life. So we have to be very, very careful of all these things, because it's direct, it's not a coincidence. Right? It's not a coincidence. The religious thought is what creates the culture. Because values come down from religion, otherwise how do you decide? So value comes from God. Then God, then people adjusted and adjusted and adjusted. They're starting with what God gave. Right? Even amongst thieves, there must be honesty. But the concept of honesty comes from God. It didn't come from thieves. Right? So that principle is there. Is you have to see what is the essence, what works. That's Sarat Rahi, taking the essence, leaving everything else. But to take the thing and throw it out without taking the essence first, that's foolish. You know, you take a bunch of sand and some water, you can throw the whole thing out. But if you know what you're doing, you take out the gold, then you throw the sand and water. You know, so that's the problem. Is we are attached to and proud of our conditioned nature, and we actually think it will work as a method within spiritual life. No. Essential principles, yes. It's common. We're human beings, there's essential principles. But those principles have to be brought in line with what God says should be done. Then it has some meaning. Then it becomes yukta vairagya. Otherwise, it's not yukta vairagya. It's yukta. I mean, whether it's yukta or whether it's vairagya, but it's not engaged in the Lord's service. Yukta vairagya means it actually does engage in the Lord's service. You know? So if it's used in God's service in a pure motive, then the bad elements won't have effect. And even if they do, it won't affect us. But if we actually think we're the doer, and oh, we don't have to follow the rules because we're the doer, and we'll make it happen. Now we're more practical. We're not fanatic. Then those elements of pride, those will have reaction. That we use it in God's service, we'll get benefit from that. But the part that's not, it's just like you put poison in milk, you'll get a poisonous effect. You'll also get the benefit of the milk, but you will get poison. So that's the thing. If it's being done for Krishna, then that poisonous aspect goes. Right? Does that make sense? Ganga Prabhu, yes.
No, I just was thinking that the predominant in things, since the Lord is the rich everything, is that the devotees have a desire to serve the Lord. Mm-hmm. Then the Lord may come and make it happen. Mm-hmm. So the desire is most important for the devotees. Mm-hmm. And now we should be careful about the desire.
For the desire, yeah. That's true. Desire is actually the essence of everything. It means even material life is based on desire. It means a person is successful because he has the desire. Like he asked me, you go to school, the successful kid is the one who has the desire to get good grades because he has a plan. And the kid who's not getting good grades, he doesn't have a plan, so he doesn't really have the desire. You know, or in anything. In business, they have the desire to make the money, be successful, therefore then they make the endeavor. And then the result, of course, is up to God. That's karma. But still, that desire and endeavor has to be there. So, like you say, is that the devotee has to be careful. What is the desire? Because the weeds means the desires, and the devotional creeper means desire. That's why they're all counted as plants. It's desire. So now when we keep the desire for Krishna consciousness, and we take out all the weeds of material desire, then that one will flourish and the others will disappear. But if we maintain them both, the best of both worlds, then the weeds always win. Like that. It's just guaranteed. Weeds will win. So the season changes and we get tired of the weeds. And then, you know. Then, yeah. Yeah. So then, that principle is that desire is the essence. So desire is the mind. So that's why we're actually trying to catch the mind. So to do it, we approach it through the body, the senses, the intelligence, the identity, the consciousness. We surround it with all these things. Then gradually by association, then the mind starts to change the values. And so that means it's changing its desires. So the desires are more towards Krishna consciousness. You know, like that. So that's actually what the whole process of sadhana bhakti and bhava bhakti is to change the desire and make that desire focused purely on Krishna. Or let's say pure unalloyedly on Krishna. Anything else? Rajarashima Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Sarva Vedha Bhaktivedanta ki, Jayana Gaura Bhaktivedanta ki.